Peanuts Gallery is brought to you by Camp Remote. Camp Remote. If you can't find us, just check the cushions of your couch. Sorry.
Once I have written a theme song, it will go here.
This is Peanuts Gallery. I'm Molly Lewis.
I'm Josh Kagan. And today we're talking about 1977's feature film, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown. It's a big movie. And so we brought in the big guns. We've got Ken Plume and Hal Lublin with us today, who are here of their own volition. They requested to be on the big show today. So when this happens, and it's not often, the first question that I have, fellas, is why? Why this? Ken, why this?
Well, this is a film that I probably watched a few hundred times as a child on my RCA Selectivision video disc copy.
Show off.
Of Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown.
For those of you who do not remember this format, because it lasted 6 weeks and it was terrible, it was basically like a video disc that was inside a square plastic holder that you slid into the machine.
It was, let's put video on a vinyl record.
Yeah. And it was so fragile, if you even breathed on it or looked at it wrong, it turned into like a million moths and flew.
How it didn't take off, I don't know. So yeah, this was a massive, probably 5 or 10 pound cartridge that held this record that you would then push with a massive click into your player, which would then grab the disc, allow you to remove the cartridge that once held it and watch half a movie and then have to flip it over to watch the other half. Unless it was a movie that was over an hour and a half, then you needed two discs.
We totally had one of these in my house, and I am almost certain my mom did not get it off the back of a truck. Interesting that you happen to bring up that format, because I was just reading this today. It was, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, was the first movie made in this format. It was the first one inventoried by RCA.
You know, they knew quality when they saw it and decided not to option that and went for Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown as their initial four-way. You know, we're not going to go for the hot hit films of the day.
No, no French Lieutenant's Woman here.
Because Josh mentioned as we were watching this, this came out the same summer as Star Wars. Is that correct?
August 1977. And then Star Wars came out in May of 1977 and had, unfortunately for old Chuck, built up quite a head of steam.
Well, I mean, Star Wars was already beginning to wane by August, so
yeah, the hype kind of died.
Audience
down.
Was were ready yeah. for Charlie Brown.
It was time for some counter programming. People wanted. They were like, "I have all this money to
you
spend."
You need a palate cleanse, is what you need.
Yeah.
How? What is your prior experience with this feature?
I know I watched this a lot growing up, and the reason why I requested it is outside of the Christmas special, which I continue to watch whenever it's available. This is probably the one I remember the strongest. And then I watched it, and I realized I did not remember all that much. I probably remembered like 5 minutes total. I remember the general idea of it.
They raced.
There was a race.
Yeah. Yeah. They raced. There were bully kids.
Oh, those bullies.
Yeah.
We will get to that. But they're like – I will say, you know, like – love your work and it's not really work. And these guys, they really enjoyed being bullies. You really, just the sheer thrill they got about causing just damage and deflating rafts and punching children in the face. Like they really soaked in it.
It was so much their entire identity that they didn't even have names.
No, their cat had a name.
Or a home to go back to after the camp session. It seemed like they were already there when the kids arrived. And you never saw them leave.
No, I was really waiting for the drop of like, well, you see, Charlie Brown, this is all we have. But I think I give the universe a little too much credit.
Molly, we were here during the incident.
Right. Well, hold up.
This movie, I feel like, really just puts it back into proving lump theory once and for all.
Oh, absolutely. Because no adult in their right mind would allow children to raft like unsupervised for days at a time. Take up on shore just kind of wherever during storming and freezing and exploding and all of this stuff. And also a dog rode a motorcycle and no adult would allow that either.
Can I say right off the bat, starting off this film, the most nonsensical, iconic image in this thing is Snoopy driving a motorcycle.
Yes.
And everyone else being nonplussed by the fact that the dog is, this isn't like a flight of fancy like the Sopwith Camel. This is, he's riding a motorcycle.
Definitely riding a motorcycle. And by lump theory, because we'll go like, why does Lucy have a slow motion machine? Where do these things come from? And I figure he just picked it off of a, like an adult. Like he, I don't think he owns that bike. I think he just went out of
all the
things.
I mean, you've seen all the specials now up to this point.
Up to this point.
Right. Have there been any other times where Snoopy has operated heavy machinery like this in full view without the kids being concerned and going, hey, there's a dog driving a motorcycle?
I'll tell you what, he does it twice in this special because we'll get to it. But he also, I have a, like a list of all the Snoopy bullshit that happens, but among them.
Trademark Molly Lewis. Snoopy bullshit.
It's just like a Helvetica on a shirt.
Let's head to the big board.
No, okay, no, let's get into it. So, like, Snoopy, he rides a motorcycle, which we agree is bullshit. He orders a milkshake. He smooches every named female character in a row and then bounces on a waterbed. He goes inner tubing. He sets up a campfire. He operates a bulldozer. He grieves the disappearance of Woodstock over sanguine cello music. He puts on a natty little hiking outfit and goes at full into the wild, and he rolls down a mountain sideways on a tire. So he's had a busy day. And I certainly got my hopes up. When I saw the plow of the bulldozer approaching... We are so jumping around the plot right now, but I got my hopes up like, oh, finally a responsible adult. Nope, it's Snoopy.
No.
Ah, dang it.
No, because that responsible adult, I would like to think, would first be like, hey, what the fuck are you kids doing in this blasting area by yourselves, unsupervised? And how are you alive? Because a lot of rocks just fell on
I mean,
you.
To be fair, the blasting area is also unsupervised because there's no one monitoring to see if kids are down in the waterway.
No, it's just on an egg timer.
I have to go back to the motorcycle because aren't we several years too late for an Easy Rider reference?
About a
Not
decade.
For 5-year-olds.
Like full on an Easy Rider bicycle. The movie I want is to go back and see the Vision Quest motorcycle ride that Snoopy and Woodstock had before they got to this camp. There were mushrooms, tons
working
of weed.
Way up the, the ranks. Right.
The end a of New the Orleans film. Graveyard, and, yeah, they're both, yeah. And they're both murdered at the end.
Exactly.
Okay, we are just painting kind of a pointillist picture of the plot of this movie. Josh, do you have a synopsis for us?
You bet I do. Synopsis. Children are dropped in a river and left to die, and also a dog punches a cat in the face twice.
Synopsis. That is pretty much it.
That's all there is to
that's
it.
That's really the meat.
I mean, honestly, synopsis is my favorite part of Peanuts Gallery.
It's just a vine. That's all we would have to do.
Because it's just so much disappointment coming out in Josh's voice in these later specials.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed
in you, Charlie Brown specials.
Let us begin at the top. We've done a little jumping around already, but maybe we should try and cruise through this thing.
I'll do the best I can. Just so we can freely move about the plot for the rest of this episode that we're doing right now. So we open on the Peanuts gang on a bus, rolling over Hill and Grove and into the desert. Sally waves at a pair of garbage children, one of whom responds by sticking her tongue out, which sends Sally into a blood rage. The bus blows out a tire, but then it's fine. I have so many questions already. Number one, who fixes the flat tire? Where is this camp? Who is driving the bus? Why is Sally so mad? How do the garbage children at the gas station survive post-lump incident? I don't know.
How are the kids sitting side by side at the windows?
I don't know. Yeah,
that's a great question. A lot of uncomfortable leaning and body-like space being taken up.
It's just, they've never seen a desert before. I don't know.
Those gas station kids look like Deliverance fucked the Dust Bowl. And their children are sitting out there just like, they use the tongue out to get a kid.
That wasn't
to like
a tongue.
Lure a kid over and then kill them.
I assume that's how they survive. Yeah.
Sure. There's just a bunch of kid bones inside the general store behind them.
As someone who's watched a fair amount of horror movies, I feel like there were a lot of setups in this movie for, and then everyone dies. Later on, everybody goes to an abandoned woods, cabin in the woods.
And there's a waltz on a phonograph.
Yeah, and there's spooky Victrola music, and it's like, oh, this is when the murders happen.
Right.
As soon as you've got spooky Victrola music and an abandoned cabin, pile of bodies.
One of them gets out a marionette, and then there's a... I don't know.
And a bear trap hanging out front. That's Chekhov's gun. You're waiting for that bear trap to be pulled down from outside the front door, mm-hmm. And that's how they're each decapitated.
You know, would take down Sally. Sally would be the one.
God. And speaking of Sally, she goes into an absolute just blood rage at this child because she waves at a child and the child sticks her tongue out and here's the list.
Boy, if I could get off this bus, I'd go back there and punch her lights out. I'm going to bring down her window shade. I'm going to dim her outlook and shorten her lifespan. I'm going to rearrange her landscape. confuse her with a silent but dignified retreat.
I just like how horrible. I'll dim her outlook.
I know.
That's a really brutal attack.
She won't be able to read any of her emails.
It's just like
I'll make you regret every decision.
Like, what is Sally's deal, you guys? What happened?
Well,
who hurt
Molly,
Sally?
We were talking about this when we were watching it. The question is Sally, does she just not want to try very hard, or is she just super dumb?
I would err on the side of dumb. In this universe in particular, she later confuses a dog with a cat when she has spent most of her time with a dog. Like, I think she's
including that particular dog.
Yeah.
She a dog some people think is a child.
She looks under a rock for said dog. Like, she's not got all her marbles in a bag, you know? Like,
no.
I'm really worried about her.
Well, she's seen a lot.
I think that poof on her hair is too tight.
I mean, and she is in the Brown family, after all. She and Charlie Brown share genes. So
she got the short end of that stick.
She really
Oh, no.
Your genes don't fit me, Charlie Brown.
That poof is Velcroed on. You know it's mostly forehead up there.
It's just that kind of eyebrow tumbleweed that Charlie Brown has, but hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else do we have for plot, Molly?
No, I mean, that's about it. Snoopy pops a wheelie in on his motorcycle. They stop at a gas station that is labeled Last Chance Point of No Return. And I have to ask the group, point of no return from what? Like, what exactly?
Movie. Fun. Yeah.
You can't walk out of the theater now. We have your $7.
Nobody will be allowed to leave the theater after the pulse-pounding milkshake scene.
Point of no refund, yeah.
You'll regret having children.
By the way, I looked up the box office gross of this film.
It's not great.
Was there any?
$3.2 million in 1977.
Oh, no, that's pretty respectable.
That's actually the equivalent of about $13 million today, a little more than that.
Yeah, but it probably cost $10 to make.
We
and they don't pay the kids.
Yeah, we couldn't find what the...
Here's some Dolly Madison snack cakes. Get out of here.
Thank you.
Because they usually talk like that.
I love the broken sentences that they deliver. Every line sounds like there was probably a dozen takes pieced together.
Like they were just delivered at one of those like make your own record kiosks that they used to have. Like,
hey, Charlie Brown.
I'll dim her outlook. I'll open her window shades. Ah!
No, not the window shades, Sally. Please, Hammer, don't open them.
Hold her back. Hold her back.
She's making a silent yet dignified retreat. Oh, shit.
Well, and,
mind just give her your blanket. No.
No. There's so much bullshit already. Like, there's... I don't know. I didn't remember any sequences of this, but it seems like, Hal, you blocked out the desert sequence.
All I remembered was they were, like, as far as I was concerned, they got in boats and then they
raced.
Were in boats the whole time and raced.
You're not wrong.
I didn't remember the entire Woodstock subplot.
Yeah.
I didn't remember them waking up in the snow, like, where the hell? This is not the summit of Everest. Where are they camping?
Well they're driving through a desert.
Yes.
Yep.
And then there's the base of mountains where
at the base. Well, there has to be a river with there's rapids.
They drive through every biome basically on the way to. They drive to the other side of the Earth.
Yeah, we were trying to figure this out because they're in a river and then they are up in the mountains because there is some non-lump voice on radio saying, up in the mountains in the high country, it's the worst snowstorm of the year, which leads me to the question, did they take a river up the side of a mountain? Like, how does that work exactly?
Nature doesn't work the way you think it does after the lumpening.
Yeah, that must be it. Shift in the Biblius and everything's going to hell.
Yeah,
and who has that voice?
I mean, well...
Oh, Molly had a great theory about
this. Well, because I feel like this movie incontrovertibly proves lump theory. And I don't remember which. It was the episode where Schroeder was like, I've sold out to Beethoven or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. It's the music one. It's not called It's Your Bag, Charlie Brown, but it's like something like.
Like basically.
I wish it was called It's Your Bag, Charlie
it's
Brown.
It's Your Bag, Charlie Brown.
Because like Schroeder was supposed to play, like his band was supposed to play at a PTA meeting. And then the PTA meeting fell through. And Lucy's like, I have a solution. It's PTA meeting in a can. And she sprays a can and it makes like it speaks.
Right, that was a runner in the episode because at first she had Beethoven in a can.
She had Beethoven in a can, and so it's she sprays this aerosol can, and some voices come out and like
the souls of the lumps.
Yes, it's aerosols.
Yeah, it's sort of a Ursula the Sea Witch situation. It took the voices of all the lumps and put them in aerosol cans.
You poor unfortunate lumps.
In cans. In air.
Molly, in all the excitement, nobody asked you, what's your history with this motion picture?
I am not sure I had ever seen it before. It's, yeah, I mean.
I like the trio of shocked looks just given.
No. Yeah, no, I really have no recollection of, I assumed Race for Your Life was going to be, I knew that in this season there was an episode where they all do motocross and it's a race of some kind. I assumed that was it. Nope. No, that's not even, that doesn't mention racing anywhere in the title. There are two different races in this season. What happened?
It's just, it's all action. It's all,
yeah.
People wanted, people, you look, you're going to pay your, how much did a movie cost back then? 78 cents?
Yeah.
You want to see
a shiny nickel.
You want to see kids in peril. You want to see birds almost drown.
You know, the Peanuts universe is pretty sort of melancholy and generally wholesome, but what would be great is if they were in like a bloodbath together. Just some kind of blood sport. That's what this universe needs.
They finally flew too close to the sun. And it's time for them to die. But not the way you think. But they freeze? Who knows?
But an incredibly measured way.
A full demolition derby.
Yeah.
They know what they did.
The girls are going to die by strangling themselves in red tape. Because they,
because
of this odd, like Trump presidency that Peppermint Patty's established where she promises a bunch of stuff she will never deliver. The voting is unclear and she rigs it in her favor when she can.
Yeah, it's a real McConnell move on Peppermint Patty's part, for certain.
I'm shocked at how easily Lucy rolled over on all this.
Well, it's tough, right?
She's on vacation.
Yeah.
She only has enough energy to be shitty to Charlie Brown. Yes. Other than that, do not bother her.
She's not a fuss budget on her off days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the people who put the movie together, and I've seen this in the specials as well, they don't really know what to do when Lucy and Peppermint Patty are in the same thing together, mm-hmm. because they both kind of do the same thing, which is ride Charlie Brown's ass and give him an incredibly hard time and boss everybody around.
Yeah.
But it seems like Patty does it in a painfully supportive way, like she's trying to make Charlie Brown stronger and make him a better person, and this is the way you do it, and I'm hitting you to get you to be better. Lucy just seems like she wants to completely undercut Charlie Brown at every moment. Like, that's just how she gets her jollies.
Yeah, with Peppermint Patty, there's a distinct air like she is mocking Charlie Brown as she goes.
You're the leader, Chuck. Yeah. Do it, Chuck.
You got this, Chuck.
You're smart, Chuck. What be kind of, smart, Chuck.
What kind of leader would have a round head like that, Chuck? Yeah. She's, well, because it's always been a toss up between who is the worst, Peppermint Patty or Schroeder. And I definitely, Peppermint Patty takes the lead in this one. She's truly the worst.
Well, it's a return to, what do you mean this is all you got to eat, Peppermint Patty, from the Thanksgiving episode?
Because the people demanded more.
Peppermint I love Patty. It when she complains about food.
I mean, to be fair to Peppermint Patty, look at the team that she had, the council that she had around her. We're not exactly bright sparks.
Not quite the A team.
Yeah.
No.
You know, Marcy, I think, has just resigned herself to her life.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I'm just going to facilitate whatever madness because I guess I got nothing better going.
Let's just skip right over those portion of the plot where they arrive at camp. They sit at a long table and write essays because that's how you're going to spend some blandishment time.
Replacing the library scene.
Welcome to Spalding Day. Gray Day Camp. We hope you're preparing your monologues for the end of camp.
Because they had to register once they got there. We're like, well, I don't know what's going on.
Well, no adults. I guess it's all just like keyless entry.
Patty treats it like a military camp. And then there are a lot of aspects that seem right. The food seems like that kind of slop that you get in the mess hall.
Yeah, like MRE kind of stuff.
They're well,
suddenly
marching.
It turns into an episode of MASH. There's like announcements going. I believe there probably was wounded dropped off at some point that they had to take care of.
1976, when was MASH on the television?
It was on.
Yeah, constantly. It was on.
Yeah.
So that was and just it's heyday.
and the kids love MASH. That's the thing.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
They sure
do. But I think through your episodes, have really firmly established that these are made by middle-aged men.
who really have no connection to children
for
whatsoever.
Other middle-aged men.
Yes. Yes. This is what the kids
and
think.
Here we are. The circle is complete.
Can I start a theory?
Please.
Yeah, please.
Absolutely, you can.
That if Linus were to grow up into an adult, he would become Christian Grey because of how comfortable he seems. Like, he's sort of laid back, and then all of a sudden he starts whipping that blanket around, and everybody becomes subordinate to him. It just seems like – I was watching. I was like, oh, that's who he'll become.
Yeah, that's the Van Pelt in him. The Van Pelts go for dominance.
One day he's going to be like, Sally, I want you to come to my basement. I want to show you something.
So it's basically Cruel Intentions.
Just a bunch of blankets, a blanket
it's
swing.
It's the two of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the slash fic portion of the show.
Oh, my God.
It's not even sexual. He just wants somebody to complain to who can't leave. He just ties them up. He's like, I don't know if I'll ever make anything out of myself. Well, then I'm stressed.
I feel like he should just get a lump. Like, the world is now just filled with, non-ambulatory gelatinous lumps.
The world's divided into two types, those with legs and limbs and those with none.
I mean, those must be his parents. His parents are just up on the second floor and he has to just go up there and moisten them.
He learned that from, like, lump herding. He had to corral lumps in their pen.
Oh, so busy at work today.
Little lumpy.
It was like herding lumps.
Yeah. just baying like sheep.
Mom and Dad are merging again.
I had made a note. There's a later sequence. Some nonsense happens on a waterbed. And I was
we mention the waterbed too?
Well, we'll get there in time. Because we're about to get to the girls' tent. Because they take a vote on their leadership structure in real time, effectively filibustering the movie. And then Peppermint Patty has a waterbed because she voted herself the leader. And then nothing in this movie seems to connect meaningfully to anything else. Like, things happen and you go, okay. And that's the only reaction you can have. Like, then Snoopy comes in and smooches every named female character and then bounces around on a waterbed. Yeah, okay, I guess.
That happened. That definitely happened. I can't think of a better place to store and keep and maintain a waterbed than an electricity-free cabin in the middle of goddamn
past
nowhere.
Past the point of no return,
yes,
yeah.
Perfect for children. Not a safety problem at all.
No. It's maybe – I don't – do you think that they were like, oh, well, you know, they're racing on rafts. It's just sort of an aquatic thing we got going. Like, what
– is it a lump? Do we have to ask ourselves that?
That is the question we have to ask ourselves in these trying times.
Is that the camp counselor?
That's what's left of him anyway.
Yeah.
I felt like, you bring up the points. This is written by middle-aged at best white men. They're like, what's hot now? It's 1976 or 77. I assume this was made the week before it came out. Yeah. It's 1977. What's hot now? Waterbeds? Percy got his son a waterbed. Let's do one of those.
Well, the kids are rafting these days.
My kids just went to camp.
You know, my son just saw Easy Rider and said it was pretty good.
he just saw it on Laserdisc.
These new RCA discs. I think we got to get a movie out for one of those. What can we make?
Ken and Hal, were you guys like sleepaway camp guys as kids? Did anything that
no.
you saw?
Look at us.
Can I be real candid? I was a Boy Scout.
Oh.
Ooh. For a brief amount of time until I realized that was not the path for me. I did not care about the outdoors. I had a kerchief. Like, I couldn't actually tie it because there's supposed to be some weird way.
You need to be a Boy Scout to wear a kerchief.
I think I got my totem chip. I don't quite remember. That's the thing where you're qualified to use a knife.
Yeah, well, your camp experience kind of sounds like the camp experience
in
this
special
event. I don't
think that expires,
by the
way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and this is really candid and awful, how much I hated camping. We went for an entire camping weekend, and I refused to use the restroom in the woods.
You went on, like, a piss strike? Like...
Everything. Wow. Strike. Oh. Until I could get back home.
I will only deposit this in civilization.
Jeez.
Was it just the sort of thing that, like, after, say, 24 hours, your body just sort of went into, like, a dull shock and you just sort of... Oh.
Yeah, kind of like it went into some kind of form of hibernation. Like I was a bear in the woods, just...
Yeah, well, I'll tell you something.
It answered the eternal question.
Yeah.
Not until it gets home, thank you very much.
Also, I made the mistake of everyone else brought hot dogs because you could bring your own thing to cook on the campfire. I had my mom go to the commissary and brought a steak, like a thick steak, that after 2 hours on the campfire was not cooking at all.
Oh, no? So get little Rodney Dangerfield showed
and,
up again.
And that was when I decided, oh, you know what goes good on steak? Garlic. Lots and lots of garlic.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you have an uncooked steak that you then have to tend to for the rest of the trip that's just wrapped in tinfoil in the middle of the woods, and you have to bag hot dogs off of the other kids.
This is terrible.
Yeah. So, no. The answer to your question.
Yeah. So this was the sort of the most immersion you've had in a camp experience was
yeah, it was films watching that again this. And again yes. on my Selectivision video disc.
I was going to ask if you feel that you missed out, but clearly you know you did not.
No, not at all. And there's bullies there, clearly. That's what every movie has told us.
There's the bullies. There's potential drownings. There's explosions.
There's no supervision.
There are Jasons.
There are Jasons.
For some reason, give hell for one Jason in this movie.
Just, I know,
just a single solitary Jason.
But there are a lot of good garbage characters, like the garbage characters at the gas station, and like just anytime there's extra campers, like just a lot of good bonus. Sometimes like it's just a bunch of Charlie Browns with toupees, but they really. I feel like
they're definitely at the very end of the movie when the award for the regatta is handed out. The camera pans from a gal standing next to the guy who's handing out the trophy. Who looks exactly like Peppermint Patty in a green dress. And I was like, oh, Peppermint Patty put on like a nice new outfit for the award ceremony. And then it pans over to actual Peppermint Patty. And I have to believe that at that point in the movie, they were like, we just don't care. Going back.
that was Spearmint Susie.
Ah, oh, poor thing. Never quite. She never quite connected with the, her cube score.
Never found her audience.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I've always had this theory, Hal, going back to your, they made this like, the same year that it came out. I always had this theory that they just made him in real time. Like,
oh, it's just a flip book.
Yeah. Exactly.
On a projector. I could subscribe.
I imagine
theory.
Bill Melendez just splicing film up in the projector.
Yes. Just actively going
almost to the next reel.
Oh no, my mustache almost got caught.
That's why it's so curly at the end.
I like the idea that he talks like that because that's what a guy with a mustache that looks like that would sound like. All right, I got a mustache. I'm this guy.
Hand me the next mural. Okay.
Thank you. Ha-cha-cha-cha.
I do have to say though, even though I never went to an overnight camp because I got bullied at day camp, there's no way I was going somewhere where I couldn't escape.
Oh, no, right. The worst.
But as soon as they started competing with one another, I got really like, I'm a hyper competitive person. I got very invested. I got very invested in who was going to win whatever dumb thing they were doing.
That you were not participating in.
That I was not participating, but I was like, somebody needs to win this.
Which
but
one I of them was is not on the side that ball at first.
Yeah, the bullies, like, those kids are criminals. They're already criminals.
Is that now the oldest characters that we've seen in a special?
That we've seen, yeah.
In the universe?
In the animated universe. Have we seen, like,
because if not a teen, adults? Then he's pre-teen, close to teen.
I mean, that kid looks 22, the tallest out of Team Rocket.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what we decided to call them, because they have R's on their sweaters and, like, what
and not else? And no names.
No names.
And no names.
But their cat has a name.
Is it Brutus?
Yeah.
Brutus.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Are they brothers? They look like the human version of, like, the chipmunks, right?
But
they
set kinda, to evil.
But yeah. Set to, yeah, dialed all the way up to evil.
They're when Charlie, so let's, we'll just try and keep going back. The kids get to the camp. Charlie Brown is dazed and confused from being on the back of Snoopy's hog. He bumps into these three kids who are just standing around picking their teeth, as bullies do.
Sure.
What's your name, kid?
Charlie Brown.
Hey, get a load of this kid with a weird name. Charlie Brown.
Gang, I throw open the question. Is Charlie Brown a stupid name? Have I been not seeing the wood for the trees this whole time?
I mean, it's certainly not the most exciting name, but I wouldn't say stupid would be
that's a name.
The way to describe it.
That's exactly a name.
Well, it's not Dunderson Gunderfoot or like something that you would actually get picked on. It's Charlie Brown. It's fine. My theory on that is to these three kids who don't have names, any name sounds stupid.
Right.
Bingo T. Periwinkle.
My name's just R. You got two different words. I only got one letter.
And they also refer to him as a stupid round-headed kid, which of course is, you know, stock and trade in this universe. Except the littlest kid out of the three bullies has just a big dumb round pumpkin head. So
he's like, just round. He's just a round torso. He's just kind of an egg.
They're really Dickensian looking.
Really.
And one of them has like big weird buck teeth. And they're all just, they're so terrible. But they love being bullies. Bless them.
And they, yeah, I mean, they love their work. And they keep, if it was ever ambiguous that they are bullies, they keep saying with words like, well, like, we just love trouncing other people. Like, they leave no ambiguity about, like, we're the antagonists. I'm sorry?
And where are they staying?
Well, they're tent number one.
Comfort Inn.
Nearby. Where they have day jobs.
Yeah. They're just sleeping in their cars. I don't know.
With their two sisters over at the gas station. They just live there together. We're home again. Another tough day at the camp. Saw a roundheaded kid.
Some girl got out of a bus and threatened me and then got back in the bus.
Oh, you win.
Big day, big day. Big
day. Look, kid, get this and get it good. We run this camp. We were number one tent 2 years ago, and we were number one tent last year. And we're going to be number one tent this year, too.
Now look here.
Let him have it, big brother.
There is, believe it or not, a character arc in this movie, which yeah. is not something we get a lot of in these things.
Yeah.
Charlie Brown at the beginning of the movie is like, I would like to become a better leader. I would like to be more of a man. I would like to be more comfortable being in charge of things. And then throughout the course of the movie, we see him attempt to do this. And I think that's a lot more than we usually get from these things.
I think that's true. And I think in true Charlie Brown style, anytime he has like some speech about like, well, you know, I never thought of myself as much of a man and I'd like to sort of establish myself and learn some adult skills, they go, dumb. And then the movie just kind of traipses on. Like, he's determined to have a character arc in spite of the rest of this movie.
He does say this line, which I wrote down because it struck me so hard. I've never been much of a person.
I decided to come to camp because I don't think I've ever been much of a person.
This is what he says. And I think he says it to himself. I don't think anybody else is around. He's just having like the most profound sadness that he doesn't. And this is like all of Peanuts is a Lunesta commercial. But this is like the
might crux. As well just grow up and be a lump.
Yeah, exactly. Never much of a person. I guess I don't even consider myself a human being.
I might not be here right now.
And he's surrounded by a beautifully toxic group that agrees with him.
Yeah.
I just look
like,
terrible.
He just looks like Mr. Met walking through life. Not much of a person. Doing what he can. But he does finally aspire to something. There are a lot of firsts in this, including him trying to progress as a human being.
I think when he does say it, though, it's when they're filling out their, like, why are you here essays at the beginning
right.
of the camp.
Yes.
And he does all of that. And then I believe, to Molly's point, Peppermint Patty goes, fart. Like, she just does not.
Snoozeville, I guess.
I thought maybe coming to camp would help me grow up and maybe even make me into a leader. I could use leadership qualities.
You can say that again, Chuck. You couldn't lead a dog on a leash.
Well, because I think she was going to write, like, I want to get better at baseball. Or, like, I'm already the best at baseball. I think was her thesis statement.
I'm so good at everything. I'm just here to just sort of spin my wheels for a summer.
I'm just here to absorb the nature and run a bunch of phony elections that I put myself at the top of.
Oh, my God. It's so Byzantine. Her rules, those initial rules, as you and Hal were saying, that she sets up at the camp for, like, who can vote and how and who's in charge of voting about voting. It's terrible.
Okay, gang. I suggest we run this tent in a democratic fashion. The first thing we'll do is elect a tent leader. We'll have to prepare some ballots. And we'll do this democratically. We'll vote to see who is leader. One gal, one vote. However, we can't pass the ballots until we voted to see who's going to pass the ballots. This will be done very democratically. Let's see.
Yeah, because that's, I mean, if we skip ahead to, okay, so there's a rafting race in this movie. I don't know if we've gotten to that part yet. And Team Rocket has like a motorized boat, and then the other teams have actual rafts. And the girls navigate their boat through democracy. Which, and they have like a women's lib flag coming off the top of their
with
boat.
With a fist, and it looks cool as hell. Fist,
mm-hmm. It's, and they're basically sitting in like a floating hot tub. It looks dope as hell. But like, what is the statement they're trying to make exactly? Is it too much to ask a Charlie Brown movie to have a statement in it? Or are they just throwing images at the wall and seeing which eggs crack?
I mean, you have that entire segment where Lucy is decrying the fact that she can't plug in the iron
yeah.
that she brought with her
women
on a rafting trip.
Oh, yeah. No.
Middle-aged white men. Yeah. Waterbed, easy rider, women's lib, ironing.
I'm packing for camp. Where's the iron?
Did you notice that the girls' tent at the campsite had like little vanity mirrors between mm-hmm. every bed?
Because like, girls.
Because girl stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, ladies girl love stuff. Looking at themselves. That's what we know.
You got to do your makeup at the camp, I guess.
I'm really glad we did this as a writer's room so we could all bring ideas. I'm just waiting for the point where Schroeder's like, well, my wife left me this afternoon.
So we can bring ideas and Mary can bring coffee.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And that the logo that they have on their raft is so cool and so revolutionary looking.
Yeah.
But like...
No, that's the women's lib flag. If you search women's lib in Google Image, yeah.
It's great. And they actually thought to include that. I am going to just very lightly toss out a theory that perhaps the same writer's room, although paying lip service to women's lib, maybe did not hold the movement in the highest of esteem.
Did they pay lip service at all? It seems like everything they do is to undercut and make fun of that.
Well, they don't name it. And there are some specials where they name it. Like, and it's mostly, I think, Lucy bandying the term around, like Charlie Brown says commercialism in the Christmas special. Just like, well, women's lib says I should go smooch that boy. Or hit him with a baseball bat or whatever it is.
That's like, it. Those are the two things.
Yeah. The two genders.
That's...
A tie vote. I guess I'll have to cast the deciding vote. Huh? The deciding vote is for Peppermint Patty. Peppermint Patty is the leader. I am the leader. It was fair and square. Boy, some vote.
Yeah, but they don't actually say it by name. You just have to identify their little girl power symbol. Yeah.
And they get along terribly, and their democracy thing is terrible. And anytime they do band together, it's to make the boys like go sleep in the dirt. Or possibly just drown in the fucking river.
Well, and you can't argue, you can't say it doesn't produce results. It certainly produces results.
True that.
But like the turn at the end is Charlie Brown acquires leadership skills and starts just bossing people around with his capital letters voice. And is like,
we
is,
should go is, over there.
Is that
there is where we should go.
Is Charlie Brown's arc resolving in like, well, authoritarianism works, turns out.
Right. Just shout louder.
Just
than
shout
the
over.
Shouting.
Yeah. Like, what? I
don't
know.
Seem like everyone surrenders rather quick to, you save us.
Yeah.
We're now all powerless to get out of this raft on the top
you know
of
what?
This wheel.
I'm tired of having agency. You go ahead, yes. Charlie Brown.
You well, who we've belittled and in no way ever trusted before.
Well, here's the thing. They tell Charlie Brown, oh my God, Charlie Brown, fix the situation. He doesn't. And then they can call him a jerk.
Yeah.
And that's it. And they never had to do anything. They didn't have to reach for a raft. They didn't have to unstop up a water wheel that they're all trapped on the top of. Charlie Brown does a bunch of stuff, and they just sort of like, hey, thanks for doing that, but you did it poorly.
I keep thinking like, well, we should try to go through the plot in order, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I realize
what
as I
plot?
Say out loud. What plot? We're now in the water, and that's basically the rest of the movie.
Yes.
It's in
like,
the water.
It's like an episode of Laugh-In at camp. It's just a series of short sketches that maybe connect, but probably don't.
I mean, that's basically every special, really. Yeah. There's a point where, like, we have a threadbare concept to sort of hang things on, but all those things we're hanging are unrelated.
Well, there is a sequence shortly after the race pushes off, I think it's in day two, where we just watch all three of the ships that are not Team Rocket just floating down the river for two unbroken minutes.
Yeah.
Just over some music. No dialogue, no narration, no lyrics, no nothing.
When you go to the refreshment stand and
well,
go get
yeah.
some more popcorn.
Yes. I have a theory that this movie is 75% bathroom breaks.
Kids had
really,
to go to the bathroom more in the 70s.
You don't want to pump that up a little bit? To 99%?
Look, there is action in this hell. There is...
The first day, it looks like they go like 20 yards down the river and they're like, fuck, we got to set up camp. Oh, we're killing daylight here. And then Snoopy sets up camp and like immediately the sun sets.
Yep, because he brings it.
Yeah, he's a magical beagle.
He has dominion over nature.
Yeah.
And speaking of nature, where is all the nature? Because everything is just this airless, absent void of no life.
There's some red woodstocks
yep.
at the end.
There's an owl.
And
there's
a tree.
Some, yeah.
Oh, and a murderous owl.
And a goddamn bear.
And a bear.
I'm speaking of the lump town that they go through.
Oh, yes. They
the
in,
is, oh,
in
the
that
house
montage.
Is on stilts?
Yeah. Yes.
That was abandoned in the 50s. Everybody's been there for ages.
Black mold.
In fact, there are dead bodies inside, but they're perfectly preserved because of the mold.
and the altitude as well.
Yeah,
they're going up mountain. Don't forget.
Yeah, you go in and you go, are you okay? Hey, are you okay? And then that's how it gets you. And then you're part of the... Yes.
Maybe they didn't have kids to monitor the lumps. And they're like silly putty and they just... flatten out into like a base level if they're not well maintained.
Yeah, if you don't moisturize a lump, they just crack like a Fabergé egg.
Yeah. If they don't have Linus there to herd them.
Right. There's no child with a blanket in this town to tell them what's what. They're all in the lowlands at the gas stations. Cheating in the raft races.
We got two kinds of grown-ups here. Lumps and brittles. You best be a lump.
You got your lumps, you got your crisps. You best be sticking to the lumps, my boy.
That's you just named all of the British snacks.
Quisenberry Chris,
eat me some lumps.
Digestive lumps, Gov.
Oh, let's stop over for some lumps and crisps.
You want some clotted lumps?
We hate it so much.
Everything in this raft will be run in democratic fashion. See that fork in the river? We're going to vote to see if we take the right fork or the left fork. Good grief, that's a tie vote. What's the matter with you? How can we have a tie vote? Lucy, pass out new ballots. The vote is whether we get off the reef or not.
There's a raft race, you
There's
guys.
There's a raft race.
Is what happens.
Yeah.
That may or... Here's a question. Helen, Ken, how many teams are competing in this race?
Four.
Although a fifth one comes in at the end. Because I guess that's legal.
Well, it's just one teammate. You know, if your teammate dies. Look, if Woodstock had actually died.
But the raft does not persist. It's a brand new new conveyance.
Snoopy was ready to abandon, go like, I'm going to finish this race because that's what Woodstock would want me to do. And then he's like, oh, I guess I'll go look for him. It was very, like, odd. He had a very odd grief cycle.
I was theorizing that when Snoopy got nominated for Best Supporting Actor that year, that is the clip from the movie that they would use.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, we are nearly to the most exciting part of the race.
I mean, I'm actually genuinely interested to know what you're saying.
Hey, Chuck, what about this? You think we should go up this alley?
Well, if the sign says so, that's what we should do.
So the Garbage Brothers go ahead in their skiff, and they find a reversible construction sign.
Yeah, it's important for this to work that it must be printed on both sides.
Both sides.
Blasting today.
It came from the Blasting Zone sign factory just that way and just planted in the ground.
I mean, that's just a multi-use sign. That makes sense.
Maybe they're blasting on both sides of the river. Who knows? So they spin this sign around, leading our heroes up into the Blast Zone. And it's Tuesday at 10 p.m., which is apparently Blast O'Clock. And Charlie Brown realizes it's Blast O'Clock. And at that moment, Blast O'Clock strikes. Mm-hmm. And they get showered with boulders. But then they're fine. But then the creek is filled with boulders. And then Snoopy pushes them away with a bulldozer.
Chuck, did you see that sign? What time is it, Chuck?
It's almost...
Why? Why did they make us sit through this if it was all fine?
The movie had to be 75 minutes long to get a theatrical release, and they only had 10 minutes of material.
I would happily just there's a gif of them being showered with boulders and screaming.
It's really satisfying.
It's really satisfying.
I kind of like them on the top of that water wheel too.
Yeah.
Just screaming group. I like how this film also. And all the Peanuts specials are like the anti-Robert Altman school. No one talks over anyone else. There is ample air between every line.
There's no crosstalk, but there's a lot of unison talking. That's how they...
Like creepy cult unison.
Yeah. Like they all get a brain worm. Like, Charlie Brown, we're stuck on top of this water
wheel. When the Unimind suddenly takes over.
Yeah. It's all your fault. They just kind of, they tap into some radio station that they get in all of their fillings.
The Anti-Czech Collective suddenly.
Right.
And then I feel like 6 seconds after they almost die in boulders,
they immediately get into like a monsoon, a legit extreme extinction level event of a storm that destroys them all.
Which was forecast. I mean, they could have paid attention to the forecast.
Stupid kids.
Were there were like overnight freezes. Like, it seems like they could have looked out at the forecast and been like, well, we shouldn't do this race, but they knew what they were getting into, I suppose.
And a multi-day race. These are children on a multi-day race through these different zones and dangerous areas. It's not even like a race like, oh, we're racing 50 feet down the river to see, like, poo sticks. Who comes out the bridge on the other side first? This is like, you're on a journey for a week. Goodbye.
Yeah, have fun, kids. You're all going to come back grown-ups.
By the way, the radio voice, is that the first time an adult's ever spoken? There's a lot of things speaking that don't normally speak words.
Yeah,
including an adult and Woodstock and Snoopy.
And there's some weird little sort of loudspeaker, because there's no camp counselors. We didn't really mention this.
It's
there's
just a disembodied voice.
No visible camp counselors at this camp, just some horns that yell instructions that everyone is compelled to follow. I imagine that that's voice in a can technology, but it's also treacherous to assume that any of these take place in a connected universe.
You don't think it's like Dennis Hopper in the Day of the Dead movies up at the top of the high rise, just issuing, like, he just has a microphone that he presses and talks into?
Or is it like a weird public service pre-record that just every once in a while gets broadcast out?
I was thinking a pre-record, like this is just kind of on a timer, and just these recordings go at certain days, but the whole camp is automated somehow.
I imagine the camp counselor, the guy who ran the camp, like he's slowly turning into a lump and desperately like pawing at his tape recorder, like, the camp's gotta go on, I've gotta get all these camp announcements
out. This is my legacy.
The missile is Samuel Beckett's Lump's last tape.
I have no mouth and I must camp counsel.
Can we also, the music in this thing is so schizophrenic needle drop.
Yeah, I will agree
with
that.
It seems like someone just put on an album and let it go from track to track, completely oblivious to what is actually happening in the movie.
It's one long needle arm and five different records on turntable, and it just hops in between them.
It feels like there's an A and B side to this cassette, and they keep switching between the two just as it's playing a little bit.
It's 77. It's an 8-track.
It's an 8-track.
We can probably hear the ka-thunk as it's going to the next track.
Well, and the individual, like, the music in this is actually surprisingly good. It's not Garaldi good, because nothing really is. But, you know, we've been kind of slowly... I've become increasingly impressed with Ed Bogus's work in this, frankly.
It's very easygoing.
Yeah.
Folksy.
Yeah. There's a very ambitious sort of cello and flute thing they have going for Snoopy and Woodstock that I like
it's
a bunch.
It's like AM Gold.
It befits the special, I think. This is the best example of Bogus.
Ed Bogus.
That's a funny name.
Yeah.
Charlie Brown, relatively chill.
Come Ed on Bogas. Down to Ed Bogas.
Yeah. No one rides for free. Ed Bogas, gas and grass. In comparison to the music that he's been doing for the specials, he picked up after Garaldi passed away, and his music in the specials has been uniformly pretty bad. I've thought that for this, that sort of, what you were saying, Ken, that kind of AM Gold, folk rock, inspirational, you know, it's gone, Charlie Brown, so race for your life.
Like, it's a new day.
It feels very 70s arts and crafts back to nature. I didn't mind it. There was nothing in it to me that was offensively bad.
No, and I mean, the lyrics, if you listen too close to the lyrics, I think, then your eyes start bleeding.
It's a new day. We all can agree that the sunshine brought you absolutely free.
I'm not... You've lost me, Ed. I don't know.
I've got a deadline to crank these lyrics out.
Write some couplets.
Again, he's just writing it down
go
on a piece
and cash
of paper
my check.
And handing it to the person in the booth. Yeah,
just all ash cigarette dangling and popping out of his mouth as he moves.
Gotta make my money. Gotta write the words.
Gotta pay my rent by today.
Free as running water. Fresh as morning dew. No matter who's the leader, when the sun sets down, it is gone, Charlie Brown. So race for your life.
Yeah, it sounds like they had just the backing track and he just kind of went in and just made up whatever. Just kind of like, just writing hooks. And then they were like, that's great, Ed, we'll take that. And he was like, no, I wasn't. No, that's great, bye. Carter slammed back away.
Slam.
And my car broke down, Charlie later. Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, but an admirable stab by Ed Bogast.
But it's fun. It's you know, it reminds me, because I discovered them around the same time, of the, it's Glenn Yarbrough. He did the music for The Hobbit. The animated Hobbit.
The greatest adventure.
The greatest adventure is what? Yes. Yeah. It sounds in that sort of vein of, let's just get a nice little lovely AM Gold guy to come in and do some folksy music.
We got Discount Bob Denver over here to sing to the children.
Making our way down the river. No thought of turning.
They all end up in a cabin in the woods is what happens.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter how.
As trying to prevent the return of the Elder Gods.
there are very few moments of actual heart in this thing. But they all end up, Snoopy finds Woodstock, the boys find the girls, everybody finds an abandoned cabin, there's a bear, he leaves, everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And they put on an album of old waltzes, just like eight-year-olds love to do. If there's one thing I know about little kids, it's that they love old-timey Victrolas, waltz music, and close boy-girl dancing.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised Lucy, now that she had power, didn't plug in her iron and start getting some ironing done.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I don't know if there was power in there. I think it was actually a hand crank.
Was it a hand crank Victrola?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see.
And it was gas powered, so they all died in their sleep.
So they were right when they said we're all dead after falling in the raft out the water wheel.
I'd like to introduce a new theory, if I may.
Yes, yeah,
that this entire film is a prequel to Final Destination, because all of those characters were supposed to die at some point in the movie. So death will come for them later.
Oh, how sweet.
When least they expect it, they will die.
Now you have to watch every special from this one on, wondering if that's death's next attempt to try and claim them.
Yeah.
Well, can I present, because spin off on that theory, that maybe they're already in purgatory.
Oh,
and this
I
is
like
all
it.
A test.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there's.
And they fail at every turn.
Is this like Lost then?
Yeah. I mean, because how else do you explain random overnight? Well, I mean, I guess it's a cartoon. That's how you explain it. A cartoon made for very cheap. But there's, you know, overnight freezes, there's explosions, there's rain, there's snow, there's sleet.
A smoke monster.
There's a smoke monster. Well, I mean, there is. Snoopy does encounter a bear who we only see briefly. May as well be a smoke monster. There's a bunch of sort of garbage characters with no discernible personality.
Is that weird point when Schroeder was trying to put that code in?
Yeah.
Also, doesn't the bear knock on the door?
Yeah, like all bears.
Who did the bear think was there? He's like, hey, can I give you the good word? Have you have a copy of the Watchtower? And then just runs away.
Oh no, a small dog!
Yeah.
Fuller brush.
My one fear. Deathly allergic. Deathly allergic to pet dander. Can't deal. Cannot deal.
So ironic.
They're all in the woods. And Molly, you were watching this with your partner Ben, and I think it was this scene that caused him to throw up his arms and just go, "No more. No more of these terrible children."
It was around this time. It was the water wheel scene specifically that he was talking about, because they get stuck in a water wheel and they're like, "Ah, Charlie Brown, you got us stuck in a water wheel." And he's like, "Fine." And he crawls out, gets them unstuck from the water wheel, and they're like, "Ah, Charlie Brown, we're emotion and we're going to die." And he was like, "Well, my partner was like, I internalized this as a child. That I need to go sit down."
And then they drop, and then their first instinct is, well, he couldn't have succeeded, so we're all dead.
Yeah.
Right.
It's doubting that they're still alive, because Charlie Brown could never
There's
have saved
no
us.
There's no way that a Charlie Brown rescue is survivable.
We must be dead. We're dead, Charlie Brown. When they say, thanks for that, and then when he says, you're alive, you made it, like, no thanks to you.
No, yeah. Literally thanks to you. Exactly no, thanks to you.
They say thanks to you, because when they say they're dead.
Right.
Then when he says you're alive, they go, no thanks to you. So they even take him accomplishing that away from him.
Yeah, no, and Lucy says, like, I think verbatim a couple times, like, no thanks to Charlie Brown. So that's just like how she lashes out in times of crisis. That's just her catchphrase.
I imagine like stubbing her toe in the middle of the night in the house alone. It's like, no thanks to Charlie Brown.
Oh, my Charlie Brown. Whoever it was that says, I think it's Linus, is like,
you're really filthy on this podcast.
Are we dead? They're like, are we dead? And All I imagine is Satan going, they figured it out. Oh, no. My trap is ruined.
Jigs up, plan two.
Are we dead?
Thanks to Charlie Brown.
I'm not dead?
Of course you're not dead.
No thanks to old Charlie Brown.
All right, let's go to the river.
The part where I threw up my hands and almost had to like lay on the floor out of sadness was back in the cabin. They're all around the fire. They've had a great night dancing, and singing.
No, it's true.
And singing the worst rendition, as Molly mentioned during the movie, the worst rendition of Camp. What are they singing? Camp
Down Race. She'll be coming around the mountain.
So basically, it's just the camp version of the Big Chill.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're all singing into a hairbrush. And then Charlie Brown, like, actually lets his guard down and is like, you know,
isn't it strange how things work out? Here we were all lost and we were all separated. And for a while, it looked like we might never see each other again. It even looked like some of us might never get home again. And now, here we are, all together again, in a safe cabin by a warm fire. You just never know how things are gonna work out. It sort of makes you think.
What's he talking about?
I don't know. I wasn't really listening.
Oh, he was saying something about the fire.
I honestly don't know. I never really ever listened to anything he said.
And I was just sitting there like, see, this is why I think this is why I was emotionally stunted through most of my childhood. Right. Like, the lesson that I learned was, oh, if you share your emotions with your friends, they will not care.
Yeah.
On a thing we mentioned briefly in the discussion we had on that little mini-sode about Arbor Day and the weird middle-aged references that are coming out into these things. In the cabin, they're talking about rations, about trying to find food. And Peppermint Patty starts reeling off like sea rations and all of these things from the military.
Yeah.
Also mention Corned Willy.
Don't you know anything about camping? Where's the Corned Willy?
Does anyone know what Corned Willy is?
I just picture.
Does anyone bother to look it up? Because I was kind of afraid to look up Corned Willy.
She talks so much weird lingo, and it's always hard to tell that if she's making it up or if the middle-aged writers are making it up. But
right. Is there any Corned Willy, Daddy-O?
I pictured a Woolly Willy, but made out of grits.
Is it a corn dog? Does it mean corn dog?
Ew.
I don't know.
Ew.
I thought that'd be like another. I don't know.
I know, but ew.
No, we're gonna make that catch on.
Yeah,
I'm gonna adapt that.
Three corned willies, please.
Oh, at the Orange County Fair, here's a corned willy stand.
Get a corned willy for me, please.
It is.
Find me corned willy and Cracker Jacks.
It's a can of corned beef hash fried in bacon grease, smushed up, and it's hash.
Circa the Great Depression?
Yes.
Yeah. It's
exactly.
This is Hobo Fair.
The Dust Bowl returns.
Yes, it features heavily in Grapes of Wrath.
It's me, Peppermint Patty Joad. I'm here.
So basically, the name of the hobo was Corned Willy.
Yeah.
That was Peppermint Patty's great uncle.
Yeah.
Dolly Madison snack cakes and Corned Willy.
It's settled like they're Soylent Green. A little bit. Have you had a little Corned Willy today?
Molly, I have a question for you about she'll be coming around the mountain when she comes. How much did it bother you that Schroeder played an intro in one key, then the kids started singing in a completely different key that he then played in? So either the kids are all tone deaf, or, which is probably true, or Schroeder, a musical genius, has no memory what the vocal range of his closest friends are, even though he's heard them sing numerous times.
Right now, the look on Molly's face is enough of an answer for me.
I want to hear, as a musician, how much that bothered you, and take me through it.
Hal, I am so glad you asked. Because here are the things that bothered me about that, is within the sort of reality of the cartoon. Yes, Schroeder started playing in another key. The kids sang in a different key, and he had to adapt. And that key was too high for them. So the kids chose a key that was out of their range. And so they're basically screaming. It's like it's like chewing on tinfoil. It's the worst sound in the world. But from a movie production standpoint, they also had a recording of these children singing in a key that they put them in, I am sure, that was too high for children to sing. And then they didn't make Schroeder record his intro in that same key. Like,
Schroeder not being real. You mean whoever was recording Schroeder's piano part?
Ed.
Yes, yes.
Ed Boga.
Ed Boga. Yes. Yes. I almost said
probably
Boga.
High as a kite at the time.
Well, it was 1976. That is a fair point. But I mean, it's on every level somebody fucked up, you know?
Yes.
It's so frustrating on so many levels.
So what is the key you would have picked for the kids?
Well, because they're all going, Shelby, come out of the mountain, where'd you come? They're like, just bring it an octave down.
Mm-hmm.
Just something. They're all at the top of their range and they are children. You picked a key that is too high for children.
I mean, they had put so many Dolly Madison cakes in them by the time that recording session came around that there was nothing but screaming you were going
to
get out of
them. Well, and I wonder even if they had a piano track for the children to sing to, or if they
just told them to yell.
If they just told, like, they just counted them in or like, okay, you know the children come around the mountain right now, go. And just like,
scream it.
Had Ed Bogus kind of try to figure out a...
Maybe it's Ed Bogus. Like, he has no real skills. Maybe his name is a key to figuring out he's a con man.
He's the key to the key.
Like, what was the name of the con man who took in the Beatles with their, I'm going to make you a recording studio. Magic.
I do not know
this. This reference is over everybody's head.
Wow. Good job.
This is a deep dive.
Yeah.
How far have you gone?
No,
James T. Conman?
Yes.
Yeah, you moved into the quantum realm with your reference.
No, I think Bogus did some good work in this special, but that rendition of She'll Be Coming Around the Mountain probably just could not be recovered.
Does that bother you more or less than when people clap along at Dragon Con when you're trying
to
sing?
Ask that.
Because I know that, for those of you who don't know, Ken plays a game called Pickup Songs where you have to sing a song. And then he drops the music out. You're supposed to stay on the rhythm of the song so that when the music comes back in, you're there. And when you do it, you're keeping very specific timing. You're like, don't friggin' clap. Nobody clap. I'm serious.
Because an audience loves to clap.
Yeah, and they think it's a bit when you're like, don't clap. But you're
and
like,
also think
I
they're
really
helping.
Stop.
No, they do think they're helping, absolutely. But sure. Your arms get tired and they slow down over time. That's the thing that people don't account for. People think they have a good sense of rhythm and they don't. And maybe they think, like, we'll just put this in the highest key possible so these children can sing it. But, like, just the human body can only produce so much, you know? You can only ask so much of the music-making parts of a person. I think that – because the clapping at Dragon Con thing is a bunch of amateurs trying their best. And this is a bunch of professionals half-assing it. And I think that's more frustrating.
And wanting to have a really good time and being shut down going, no, you do not contribute
to this.
You're
going
to screw me up. This is not about you right now.
Yeah. No, I'm glad we're talking about this on a podcast because the whole gist of it is I have the microphone, so I get to steer this. I'm driving.
She'll be coming around the mountain. She'll be coming around the mountain. She'll be coming around the mountain when she comes.
So our kid, should we just get into the third act?
There's a third act.
There is a classic three act structure to this movie. I think we meet all of the kids. They show up to camp.
Oh yeah. I think, and we're now to the point where Peppermint Patty has kicked the boys out of the cabin. Is that where we are in the plot?
Yes,
now?
Because of their again Byzantine voting system that just like means we want boys to sleep outside.
They can't all sleep in the same room because something. What?
The baby Jesus?
Women are different.
Because of Jesus, yeah. Save room for the Holy Spirit. That's true.
The Holy Lump. and so the boys have to lay outside and they get buried in snow and it's like the end of The Shining. and the girls come and dance, basically come and dance on their corpses for all intents and purposes, looking for Christmas trees. Charlie Brown and his friends are roused out of their almost terminal slumber. And Charlie Brown basically says, okay, everyone, shut up. Let's win this. As if he's yelling at the director of the movie himself. Like, hey, you guys, everyone shut up. There's a race. Hey, look, over there down the end of the river, I can see the end credits.
Hey, everybody,
come on.
We have a hard out at 75.
Did you know a feature movie has to be at least 75 minutes in order for us to get a tax break? Well,
okay,
come on.
Well, let's get back up the – we skipped over – my favorite part of the cabin sequence that almost made up for them screaming, she'll be coming around the mountain at my ears, was – this is – the cabin is when they're all reunited. Snoopy and Woodstock walk in, and everyone greets them by going, hey!
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 Hey! Hey! Hey! Hey! Like that. Which I can't imagine walking into a room and that just being the standard. I would like us all to try it, in fact. Like, so imagine I've just entered the room. Hey!
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 Hey.
Oh, no, Satan.
Hi, everybody. You didn't see me.
Hey.
Hey. Oh, did it again.
Wait. So basically, Peanuts is the good place?
Yeah. It's not a very good place.
Did they just keep resetting the whole scenario?
At best, it's a medium place.
Well, Chuck, you've done it again. Cold cereal. We need a hot breakfast. Where are the hot cakes? Where are the bacon and eggs? Where are the huevos rancheros? Now, just a minute. Nobody's asked your opinion. If you don't like what we've got, you don't have to eat it. No offense, Chuck. Just a natural feminine reaction to a most deplorable situation.
Josh, if I walked into your house...
Go on.
And, complained about everything you offered me, and also made you sleep outside, and then when you called me on it, I said, no offense, Josh, it's just a natural feminine reaction to a deplorable situation.
I must have slept through that that class in biology. I don't know what feminine reaction that is, what chemical, what synapse is exploding.
Oh, Josh, you know.
I'm trying to decide if I can ever use that. Like, if I can just give someone a ration of shit and be like, no offense, just a natural feminine reaction to a deplorable situation.
Sorry I pushed you off that cliff.
It's just a natural feminine reaction.
The deplorable situation was that you were standing here next to me. But as soon as Charlie Brown shouts at her, she's like, oh, okay, I see where you're coming from. And that is the – and that's the wrong lesson for Charlie Brown to learn, I feel like, mm-hmm. is yeah. that, all right, I need to be more take charge. I need to – but then all he does is he just yells at people and they're like, oh, okay, I guess we have to listen. He's yelling louder than the other yelling person.
But they don't – they're allergic to responsibility. When they're stuck on the wheel, they're like, you do something. The only thing they love more than not being responsible is hating whatever Charlie Brown does. And that scene at the mill.
It was like perfect for them. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really like, we're making you the ultimate responsibility.
It's the thing that coheres their whole group. Absolutely.
Yeah. Do something. You did something. That's not the thing we wanted.
We hate what you did.
Well, we're going to die. We're still alive. No thanks to you, Charlie Brown. Like they are in hog heaven rolling around in the mud of
Does
their
Charlie
own
even have
shallowness.
A single friend?
Linus.
Even Linus
was also in that raft, yeah,
he's
telling
caught up
him
in the
to
mob
bugger
sure.
off, and that they're all dead.
He does get swept up in the mob mentality, but I feel like Linus goes back and forth. The more of these things we
he
watch,
he wants to herd his lumps. He doesn't want to be part of this group.
That's all. Isn't that what any of us want to do? Just kick back and herd our lumps.
Herd your lumps,
Drifter. A tough day.
Across the snowy prairies.
Linus goes wildly off and on model, and sometimes he's Charlie Brown's best buddy, and then other times he's just sort of a rambling simp. Like in your episode, Hal, mm-hmm. the Easter Bunny,
yes.
He is a legit crazy person just walking around town going, a giant rabbit is coming for all of us.
he's wildly crazy in a lot of ways. I mean, if there's like a fundamentalist member of the Peanuts gang, he's the one who's going to go off the deep end.
He certainly jumps into sort of the cult mentality very quickly with the Great Pumpkin and the any sort of that's just kind of the he's
going
either
on scripture left and right.
He's dispensing like the wisest, like nicest things, or he's just like off the deep end. But there's no space in between. There's no like neutral Linus that we know of.
It's sort of like Keanu Reeves in Parenthood, where a lot of the time you're like, he's not that smart, and then every once in a while he whips something out. You're like, whoa.
That's why they keep you around.
Yeah. Waters that run the other way also run deep.
and then we can add to his list of personality traits, occasionally a violent whipcracker.
Sure. Sure.
He's just unhinged.
Well, that is like his multi. He can do anything with that. That blanket is – he uses it as a weapon. It's a tool.
It's like his Indiana Jones whip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pre-Indiana Jones.
Or Christian Grey. Maybe he runs a successful publishing company.
You're really trying to make this 50 Shades of Linus.
It just makes sense. It just makes sense. That's like when he's most comfortable.
I like that.
I'm not.
Somehow that is in your reference wheelhouse.
That's
to make
all
a Christian
I know.
Grey reference.
All I know
Did
is
Did you
that,
watch all those films?
No. All I know is that he's in it and that it involves probably whips at some point.
I don't believe you didn't watch these
I
films.
I swear.
You watch
all
every film.
He has
I swear.
All the books on his Kindle.
If I had watched it, why would I deny it?
Oh, it's okay. So they didn't hold up to the books is what you're saying.
You know, it was so unfaithful. It doesn't – the original Usenet articles I was reading upon which the books are based.
the original does Twilight fan fiction.
Yeah. The WikiHow article,
absolutely not archive of our own worthy at all.
Just you sitting in a bathtub, a bunch of candles lit, your iPad in a big Ziploc bag.
Yeah, just, this is nice.
Yeah, this is a little me time.
It's time for me.
Okay, we can see the end of the movie from here, guys. We gotta
get back in the raft. The credits are right over here. Come on.
Do you want to just insert 5 solid minutes of music then?
Close to the end. We just kind of drift. There's like a waterfall and some sad music, and everyone yells at Charlie Brown, and then they go over a waterfall, and it's fine.
You made a waterfall, Charlie Brown.
Like, everybody is fine. The waterfall is of zero consequence. Like, they bounce out and go, oh, that was some waterfall, and then their boats sink for unrelated reasons. And then a bunch of seemingly unrelated jukes happen, I guess.
The bullies, their boat, which was all high tech and beautiful, it gets pretty beat up over the course of the movie. That's pretty satisfying.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're about to win. And then it just sinks.
It just sinks.
Nothing that our kids did makes it sink. Nothing that they did make it sink. It just... They were going to win.
Coming up
and then
on that 75 minutes.
Well, it sinks under the weight of their evil deeds.
There you go.
It finally catches up to them, and they're brought to the bottom of the river where they
sink into the River Styx. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're done. You didn't bring enough change for the ferryman.
As Linus spake,
should have had coins on your eyelids, suckers. Now you and that dumb cat are going under.
Is that why they put the? I thought it was just to keep them from flapping up.
Well, that was the toll. To pay the ferryman to cross the River Styx.
But I thought you don't pay the ferryman.
Sorry.
No, thank you.
Tonight on Old Guys Talk About Old Guy Rock, while Molly sinks further and further into her chair.
It wouldn't be the last time.
And then Woodstock wins.
Woodstock wins. He constructs, constructs a raft in the middle of the course.
Out of 3 sticks and a leaf.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the whole camp cheers him on. Like that's a legit
craft wasn't inspected beforehand.
Win by default.
They also want this to be over.
Yeah.
They can't wait. They're like, the movie's almost over.
We've been standing on this dock for 3 days.
It snowed on us 5 times since we've been here.
Here's a logic question. And I know it's just a dumb cartoon for babies, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Mm. Woodstock wins. Let's overlook the fact that in the next shot, there is a giant banner that says Woodstock is the winner. Okay. How do any of these kids know this bird's name? Snoopy can't talk. Woodstock can't talk. How do they just know?
There don't seem to be many birds capable of building and piloting a raft. I feel like that bird's name has gotten around. Oh, have you heard of Woodstock, the boating bird? He can say the word help.
Did he actually
say help?
That's not
creepy. Yes.
He's like, help, help.
Please don't.
Snoopy says it later too.
He also yodels.
Yeah.
Remember that? He builds a house on Snoopy's face, which I think we neglected to mention, and then he yodels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good work, Bill Melendez.
Well, if it isn't the rafting, talking, yodeling bird.
By the way, every time Snoopy howled for him, I like wanted to cry. Howling Snoopy makes me very sad. And I know
Bill Melendez.
You're not yet up to oh my god, was it Snoopy Come Home?
Oh, no.
Oh, we
did that already.
Okay.
We did that with...
I cried through that as a child.
Now, if you want to stop crying, every time you think of that howling, think of a middle-aged man with a handlebar mustache doing that into a microphone.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's even worse. Now the crying intensifies.
We did Snoopy Come Home with your Max Fun stablemates, Can I Pet Your Dog? I think one of the reasons why... Because I basically enjoyed this picture. I thought it was fine because all I can compare it to is the last movie they did, which is Snoopy Come Home, which was just a real wrist opener.
Mm.
Just like 45 minutes of kids crying and being sad and the girl in the hospital dying, and it's just awful. So in comparison, children almost getting crushed by boulders and angry feral cats on leashes with spike collars, well, it's just a good day out at
the sun.
It's
just a walk in the park, yeah.
Did you basically enjoy the movie, Molly?
I was prepared to go either way, honestly. Like if I had walked into Studio Kagan today and everyone was like, "Poof, this one," I would have been like, "Yeah, I suppose so," because there was really no meaningful connection from any one plot point to any other plot point. But I enjoyed the thoughtfully drawn garbage characters. I enjoyed the peppy little cello music whenever Snoopy did anything, And I enjoyed pretty much every part that didn't have Charlie Brown in it, if I'm honest. Like, and we call it Snoopy bullshit because they're animated, like, visual sequences that are just designed to sell merch with Snoopy's image on it. But I feel like it was some of the best parts of this movie. I mean, just in kind of every way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there really was no plot to speak of. And the rest of it was children being terrible to each other or screaming she'll be coming around the mountain. and in the end, I'm glad that Woodstock won. He was kind of the only one I didn't get mad at any point in this movie. And so in that way, I feel like they really stuck the landing.
Hal and Ken, what did you think of this?
I'm a sucker. Anytime animated Snoopy is on screen, I'm happy. It's not good. It's not good. It's just not good. It's not good, but I mean, Snoopy.
It's fun.
And I will always love Snoopy.
There is far worse.
If he chirps or makes noise or builds something or just any Snoopy nonsense, I'm on board for it. I'm just on board for it. And I will watch it, even though it felt like it was 500 hours long. It felt like I was watching 2001 twice. But I still, anytime
Snoopy's the full 4002.
The full 4002.
What did you think of this, Ken?
I have such an exquisite Stockholm syndrome about this film that I really can't divorce it from my nostalgia of watching it just so many times. Yeah. Once that music cues up at the beginning, or that weird psychedelic mindscape ending at the end, which reminds me, you recall there was, and I recall this only because my father also owned this video disc. There was a Grateful Dead film.
Literally called the Grateful Dead movie.
Right. And in that, it has that weird sort of psychedelic wash artwork that you see at the end of Race for Your Life. And so in my mind, those two things are linked. And when it goes full mushroom trip at the end of this thing.
You're ready.
As they're suddenly just riding in this artistic void. I can't. That there's so many emotional triggers that song has for me.
The original title was What a Long Strange Trip It's Been, Charlie Brown.
Is that true?
No.
No, okay. I was so prepared. No, the end credits reminded me of any episode of Pee-wee's Playhouse, because that's how they all end.
I mean, it also...
riding a scooter through the desert.
It is very much like a Grateful Dead song that just is very thin and goes on forever.
Yeah. Just kind of riffing on the same
thing. It is. It's just kind of like, We're here, we got time to fill, and you're here, and I guess we're all here. And
we're probably high, most likely. Yeah.
And Phil Lesh is the voice that you hear over the radio.
I would go as far as recommending it. If you can find it free, if you can find it streaming, I wouldn't recommend Snoopy Come Home. And I'm talking about just the movies now. A Boy Named Charlie Brown is still my absolute favorite. I think it is actually a very good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Snoopy Come Home is really terrible. And I thought this was just...
This is amiable. Fine. Amiable.
That's a great word. Sure. Everything about it is amiable except the children yelling at each other.
I honestly, it's not something I would recommend that you watch with your full attention, if that makes sense.
Oh, like, no. Have Twitter open, have Facebook open.
I wouldn't even put Snoopy Come Home on, like, in a bar on mute, you know? Like, because it's a lot of visual sequences children
weeping.
That's
a lot of booze to cry into you could sell that night.
Right. I mean, like, it's – you're just watching, like, various kind of – just every kind of separation anxiety you could have is played out in that movie, and that scans visually. But this is visually pleasing. You can kind of – at any, you know, an hour later, you can look up and be like, oh, still rafting? Okay, and then look back down at your phone.
I mean, when it comes to Peanuts, it does have some production value.
It looks great. The pencil work, as Molly was saying when we were watching it, like, obviously there was one guy who knew what he was doing.
Yeah, any sequence that is clearly outlined in pencil is the most visually interesting.
And seeing it in sort of a theatrical aspect ratio sort of classes it up a bit, too.
Well, we haven't mentioned this yet, but Ken provided us with a very glossy 1080 print of this.
Yeah. My video disc did not look like this.
Lovingly restored.
Josh, before we wrap, can you please tell the story about when you saw this in theaters and what they rolled at the front?
So in 1980, a local theater in Connecticut was showing Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown as a kiddie matinee.
Demand.
And so my mom took my sister and I, and at 2 p.m. sharp, the movie started. The first thing that we saw on the screen was a live-action car winding up the side of a mountain to a big abandoned-looking hotel. And my mom and sister and I were like, well, maybe it starts off live action. Like, certainly we had seen Disney movies that were like live action and then animated. Maybe they're doing something different with this. Mm-hmm. And then the title of the movie, The Shining, came on the screen, at which point every parent like turned into 100 birds and flew at top speed out of, to the projection booth. And they're like, stop, stop, stop. And then we got Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown instead, which was just as terrifying, and begins with a bus winding its way to nowhere.
Up a mountain to a remote location.
It was beautiful.
Okay, so let you finish it.
That seems like a good intentional pairing, honestly. How different are they really?
Can we now have that double feature? Can we just... Yep. Peanuts Gallery presents...
The Shining. We'll do it Warhol style on the same screen right next to each other.
Just I bet they sync up.
Yeah, if you lay them over a top, they fill in the negative space of one another perfectly.
I at least want to hear that Race for Your Life song at the top of The Shining.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, yes, you're so a chubby.
Clear as running water. Fresh as morning dew.
Oh, I'm going to go do that right now. Is there anything... I wouldn't say we necessarily went straight through the picture point by point. Were there any point? Anything?
What point?
Yeah, there's no point. Is there anything we missed? Any bits that anyone's dying to talk about?
I'm sated, I think. I think I would watch that again intentionally, which I can't say for every special we've covered.
100%.
Yeah.
I would watch it with friends. I don't want to watch it alone again.
You don't have to. Do you I never have to? Have to.
I don't.
I'm out.
Yeah. You've met your quota.
Yeah. I got a life to lead.
Hal and Ken, because I was so stunned by your otherworldly beauty at the beginning of the episode and had 62 brain farts whilst trying to say two of my dear friends' names.
I'm Hal.
And you're a good looking guy. Why don't we take a minute to Hal? Is there anything you would like to plug? Where can we find you here on the Great White Web? What are you? What's your story, man?
I'm at Hal Lublin on all social media. You can listen to We Got This with Mark and Hal. You can listen to Tights and Fights. Both of them are on Maximum Fun. You can listen to Good Morning Night Vale, the podcast that I host for Night Vale Presents, where we go through and re-listen to Welcome to Night Vale episode by episode. And it's me, Symphony Sanders, and Meg Bashwinner breaking down and analyzing and doing behind-the-scenes interviews. It's a lot of fun, and I think we are rolling out episode 8 as of this recording.
Mazel tov.
So yeah, thank you. And that's it. Just all over. Venture Brothers season
7.
You're on 7. It's been a while.
I was damn it, Hal.
7 of the one coming out. That starts August 7th.
So now's the perfect time for everyone to dive into season 6.
So dive into season 6. And while you're at it, dive into 2 through 5. Because I know you're a huge fan who has seen 3 episodes. There's so many people like, I love the Venture Brothers so much. And I'll be like, oh, did you see season 6? No, are they still making it? I stopped at season 2. They are still making it. It keeps getting better. Watch it and do yourself a favor. Even if you don't see the stuff that I'm in right away, it's worth the journey.
Ken?
Well, I'm at Ken Plume, and I have a podcast called A Bit of a Chat with Ken Plume.
Is this your 10th year of doing it?
It probably is. Yeah, that sounds about right. That's when I stopped wanting to do transcripts of interviews and just figured I'd record them.
And I'm going to make a podcast that will be untranscriptable because each episode will be 45 hours long.
I priced myself out of transcripts. I just had a book come out from Dark Horse, Go Team Venture, The Art and Making of the Venture Brothers, which is about the show that I guess Hal is in.
Are they still making it?
Jinx. Now you can't talk for the rest of the podcast.
Oh, that's going to be a problem.
Man.
And you will, of course, although when this comes out, it may have already happened, but you preside over like 45% of Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia.
There's a few panels. We've involved Hal a bit in the shenanigans this year, and Molly has done it, and you've done it in the past.
It's true.
Yeah.
I was definitely there.
My body was there.
Yeah. What's that?
We did a panel together.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
No, good times.
Edit.
No, it's fine. I think people know that my memory is a little, it's a senior moment. I got my senior moments.
I mean, we've been friends for years and he couldn't identify us at the top of the podcast.
I got nervous, guys.
I didn't know which one of us he tripped up on, and I don't want to know because I like the mystery.
You know what? Sometimes you open your mouth and absolutely nothing comes out. And sometimes that happens twice, you know, and sometimes you should take that as maybe a guide to not talk anymore. I'm Josh Kagan.
I'm Molly Lewis.
And this has been Peanuts Gallery.
Thank you for listening. If you like the show, consider leaving us a review on iTunes, tweeting about us at Peanuts Podcast, or telling a friend. Thanks to Lar D'Souza for the graphics, Ken Plume for the blandishment, Waffle Media for the nickels, and Sparky, Bill, and Lee for everything else. If you'd like to buy an official Peanuts Gallery meat lump plush, you can't because they don't exist. But you can turn a dirty sock inside out and put googly eyes on it, and you're basically there.
Who's ready to have opinions about cartoons?
Yay!
I mean, if it's Peanuts, we should all do it in really creepy unison, right?
Check, check, check.
Let's have opinions about cartoons.
Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown.
That was...